flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by the Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc., who's working hard day and night, he and his committee, as we approach Super Bowl 59. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Newell, man. That was a Chris Coleman special. He did it right that
Absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely. He's great. The best.
Thank you, Chris. Oh, man. Yeah, man, we're basically there. We are in the red zone, and I guess it's appropriate to say we're ready for the tushy push. It's time to get over the line.
There's a lot going on. I was out of town for 3 or 4 days, and I get back and I just start reading the stories and you know, about everything that's happening, getting a lot of texts from people actually reminding me to say thank you to you, your committee, you know, everyone with the city administration working hard, looking forward to this big event. I read an article. I've been kind of searching through Kansas City and Philadelphia Inquirer, trying to pull interesting little articles, and I hope to find one to read every day. And I read the article on air as my monologue this morning about an individual that says he's a journalist there. He's coming to New Orleans for the Super Bowl, but he bartends on the side off and on again. And he says, when I retire, he goes, I'm retiring to New Orleans, because if you're a surfer, you go to Oahu. And if you're a bartender, you go to New Orleans. And he tells a cute story. But these are little nuanced things that money just can't buy, right? You really can't. And, you know, it exposes the city in so many different ways to so many different people.
Yeah, I think it's why when I get asked about the quote economic impact of the Super Bowl, I get a little bit frustrated or defensive, because, you know, economic impact technically means ticket sales and beer sales, and that's all well and good. But the real value of the Super Bowl is the 200 million people who are going to watch it worldwide, and the feelings it's going to generate in them about the city and the region and the state. It's the brand value. It's the goodwill, is, I guess, the technical term. And that is, I guess, there are ways you measure it. You multiply eyeballs by something. But this is a chance to tell a story about New Orleans. And of course, everybody's going to know about the Katrina narrative and now the terrorist attack and then Snowmageddon. And we are going to come through this looking better, feeling better, even smelling better. we have in many, many years, and that's going to generate returns for us in ways that we can't imagine.
We've got a lot to cover, so let's get into it, Michael. CBD update on that. Let's start there.
Yeah, so there's a ton of road work that's getting finished up. There's stuff going on in CBD, or Girard is getting finished up with some asphalt, St. Charles, Carondelet, Union. Over by getting over towards the French Quarter, the Hard Rock Collapse site, which is at Rampart and Canal, that's getting finished up. The lights are getting turned back on. Then getting into the French Quarter, there's some work that's going on with the sidewalks going down Bourbon Street that's getting finished up. But Charters, Nichols, Ursulines, and St. Phillips are already done there. And then the asphalt paving on South Claiborne, which is critical because one of the teams is going to practice at Tulane, that's been complete. There's no striping. That's going to happen after the game. But so we're getting all that work done. And then what also is really exciting now is the murals are getting finished up. There's a massive Shepherd Ferry going up on the Marriott on Canal at Charters. You can go check out. He's the guy that did the Obama Hope poster, a really famous street artist. There's a gorgeous Terrence Osborne that's going up in partnership with Raising Cane's on Poydras Street. There's murals going up for our French Doors project on Dauphine and Canal. There's one going on the RTA ferry terminal, one on the Entergy substation. And even Plaquemines Parish is getting involved. They're putting up a gorgeous piece on the side of WDSU. And, you know, it's interesting. When you think about every Super Bowl and kind of what it means and what the legacy is, there's no doubt that 2013 was about New Orleans is back and it's better than ever. That's what I remember about it. I think now that these murals, these beautification elements, might end up being one of the things that distinguishes this Super Bowl from the other 10, because they're going to be a lasting element of beautification and amplification of the culture that we should enjoy for, you know, 10, 20 years.
Absolutely. I got a text here. People want to know if DJ El Camino is going to make an appearance at any Super Bowl parties, and if so, is it open to the public?
Yeah, well, actually, so what's being planned right now, and actually, I was actually just on the phone with Kendrick Lamar's manager, and now that KC's going to be here, he's got this idea. We're still working on it, so I don't want to overpromise, but it's going to be a surprise guest of Taylor Swift, Kendrick Lamar, KDOT, and me DJing them and kind of doing something as part of the halftime. But I can't talk about it yet. It's kind of secret. So let's just keep that between ourselves. It's gonna bring the house down. Yeah.
He's driving a hard bargain, folks, is what that means, right?
Man, oh man. You know, this is a true story. Years ago, I got an invitation to DJ with Snoop Dogg after Jazz Fest, and it came on the spur, and I wasn't ready, and my rig happened to break, and so I couldn't do it, and I was actually relieved because I'd gotten the call. I think somebody kind of presumed something about me that wasn't necessarily true.
What, that you were talented or what?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like when you have an MBA, people presume that you like know how to run a business. Kind of similar thing to that, you know, because I had a MySpace page. Hey, listen, I got something serious, though. This is just for everybody out there. Two things. The roads are a mess around here right now. There's tons of construction going on. The NFL is closing up stuff around the dome. Please go to nolastreets.info to find out about closures. Also, there is a park and ride program that is starting that people should also definitely look at. They're going to be pickup places around the city, out at Delgado, over on the West Bank at Oakwood, New Orleans East at the Old Plaza Mall, Audubon Institute at the zoo. It's going to be $10. Children under 12 ride free. You can buy them right there. They'll drop you off down either at Diamond and Convention or down by the Dome. And it's going to be Friday and Saturday, the 7th and 8th. If you're coming down at that really congested time, consider doing the park and ride. It'll make you much happier.
So let's talk about that in the time that we have left, there's a number of road closures, and they come in phases, right, as we get closer and closer to the event.
That's right. So there are ones around the dome that are closing as of the 3rd. There are ones that are closing around the CAC because there's a major commissioners event there on the 4th. The Sanger, which has the NFL Honors, which is kind of like their Oscars, that's going to close around there as of the 4th. Right now there's mostly construction traffic, so there's slowdowns. But once we get into next week, your best bet for getting around the clean zone is honestly going to be on foot. It's compact enough that you can do that.
So, Michael, as I was looking at this, are there any plans to restrict folks in the French Quarter? I know there's been times where you couldn't go into the French Quarter by vehicle. Do you know if there are any plans relative to that?
It's a great question. I don't know what they are going to be, but I've got to imagine that it's basically going to be pedestrianized. Certainly, the first 7 blocks of Bourbon Royal charters, those blocks. Fox is going to be broadcasting from somewhere down on Bourbon Street, so that's certainly going to be closed the whole time. I'll find out. We'll make sure that's added to nolastreets.info. But, no, the idea of driving through the quarter for even today, Newell, I was trying to drive down this morning to go look at progress, and I couldn't get in between the construction and the murals going up. So, I think that you should consider the upper part of the quarter kind of a no-go zone for the immediate term.
Yeah, because I would think, that Thursday and Friday of next week, if you have any plans on going to the French Quarter, you should probably get dropped off somewhere on the outside. And not even try and get in there.
It's a bad idea on a good day. And, right now, if you take the park and ride, for example, they'll drop you off on Diamond Street and Convention Center Boulevard. So if you're able to walk, that's probably about a mile into the quarter, maybe less than that, actually, maybe about half a mile. But otherwise, you want to be dropped off on kind of the outskirts, like a South Rampart, and then scoot your way in, or come in the backside from Esplanade and come up a few blocks. But the hardcore tourist part is going to become, kind of a NFL's version of Disney World, I think.
My area down there by the Sanger, you say that's going to be complete. I just got a text. Someone said they went to a concert there last night. They said it is a disaster right now.
They've
I can't believe they'll actually get it finished in time. Hopefully, the weather's cooperating, so as long as that happens, they probably will get it done by this weekend.
No, that's exactly. I was actually just talking to the guys who were running that, and they basically said, the only thing that was going to stop them was having another, really, really bad weather event or really severe rain. And it looks like we're catching a break because the weather looks fair through the beginning of next week. So I am, I'm appropriately nervous right now, but I'm not panicked. When you go to the doctor and there's that pain scale where it's like a smiley face for no pain to like the one like unbearable pain. I'm just somewhere in the middle right now. I'm kind of with the flat smile,
What's really exciting is when the NFL starts putting their decor up, and mm-hmm. I think that started when it starts today, if my memory serves me correct. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm seeing it all around. I'm looking at the dome right now. It's on the dome. It's in the airport. Some of the scrims are up. The feeling I have right now, it's actually interesting. That feeling you have at the beginning of Mardi Gras where there's that energy and where, you got to think about being inside or outside of the box and how you're going to get home or get to an event. It's the exact same vibe. It's energy. It's slightly manic, but it's a very special feeling, which I've only ever felt in New Orleans, the beginning of a festival. And that's really what it feels like. And, you know, in listening to Roger Goodell speak at Washington Mardi Gras, he was talking about what a unique place New Orleans is to host Super Bowls. And he talked about three things. He talked about how compact it is, which, of course, really distinguishes us versus, I don't know, San Francisco, where their stadium is in San Jose. The second is the culture. You know, you can have a Super Bowl in Vegas. They don't even try for authentic culture. It's kind of the opposite. Right. It's meant to feel manufactured and artificial. Ours is totally organic, and people love it. And the third thing is, and this is, you know, him speaking, nobody knows how to do big events as well as New Orleans. It's definitely one of our superpowers, from, you know, the cops to the fans. And so I truly believe that the NFL loves having the game here, despite us being the smallest market to host the game.
Yeah, no doubt. Any other advice that you have for folks? You know, I think this weekend things are going to really start tightening down throughout the area.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, don't try driving into the CBD if you can avoid it. The CBD French Quarter, certainly. Go to the Sports Foundation website to look at the calendar of events. There are a lot of events that are open to everybody. There's going to be a lot of fun stuff going on over at the convention center. And I would just treat this, we had Taylor Swift, and on the other side, we have Mardi Gras, and in the middle, you know, the big cream center is Super Bowl 59.
Michael, let's pivot to a number of big news stories that are positive for not only this metro area, but the state. You point out a recent Times-Picayune story gave glimpse into the inner workings of how that $10 billion Meta AI data center for Richland Parish came to life. We just heard about what the Chinese are doing, and the markets went crazy, but this is something that's going to happen, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is happening. This is not affected by the DeepSeek news, you know, at all, although it was jarring to the markets. The interesting thing about the Meta deal, where they're building their largest AI center ever, is that, like a lot of things in economic development, it happens slowly and then all at once. The slow part is that this is a site that was bought back in the Jindal days. It was bought, 15 plus years ago, because they said, that's a good site up there. One day we might want to use it for something. And it just kind of languished there outside Richland with nothing happening on it. But then a year ago at Washington Mardi Gras, Entergy executives flagged the opportunity to the state. Meta was looking for a huge site with great infrastructure, and with the right tax structure, the right utilities. And then it was Governor Landry and Secretary Bourgeois and the team. They just, did what they seemed to like doing, which is to move with lightning speed and figure a way to yes. This would not have happened without Entergy being a great economic development and utility leader, would not happen without the PSC cooperating, would not happen without the legislature cooperating, because they repurposed a broadband tax rebate bill into a data center incentive. And so after languishing for over a decade, the deal came together, in just a matter of months. And so it just kind of shows you how you have to have the right conditions. Then you have to get a little bit lucky. And then when you have the opportunity, you have to really aggressively go for it. So this one was executed to perfection. And the implication of it, I think, is so much bigger than just this massive site. Because we always wonder why we missed out on the automotive revolution. It's simply because we didn't go for it back in the 80s, whereas Mississippi, South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee did. This time we're going for it. We're not going to miss out on the AI revolution, which some people are calling, as big as the invention of fire. So yeah. I really give credit to the way the team came together. It was kind of a case study in how you land a whale in economic development.
Xavier University celebrates their 100th anniversary with a centennial launch event here recently. Tell us about it.
I just wanted to call out Xavier. It's a school that's kind of the little engine that can. It doesn't make a big fuss, but it really does things at the highest level. People might know that Xavier is the number one producer of African-American medical school graduates in the country, despite being a small school. It's typically ranked in the top five or six or so best HBCUs in the U.S., right up there with Howard and Morehouse and Spelman. It was ranked number one HBCU for economic mobility, which is people who start in the lowest quintile and end up their lives in the top two quintiles by Harvard University. And it's the only historically black Catholic university in the school. So it's a really special place. And anytime we get a chance to recognize and support what they do, we should do it. And now their next move, of course, is going to be setting up a new medical school with Oxford Health, which will be, only the nation's fifth historically black medical school and the first one, I think, in many decades. So, 100 years old and still going strong.
And I wanted to get this in real quick, too, because it's going to be starting day after tomorrow. Tulane's hosting a startups sprint, Tulane's Innovation Institute, January 31st to February 2nd. Over the weekend, attendees will form teams, brainstorm, innovate ideas, develop prototypes, refine their concepts with guidance from expert mentors. The event culminates in a pitch competition with a cash prize awarded to the winning team. Y'all are big believers in this and have been behind this for a long time.
Absolutely. And Tulane's really stepped up their game. People want to know more about it, can just Google Tulane Startup Sprint, or they can go to innovation.tulane.edu and find it there.
Absolutely. Got to get to a break. We will be right back with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. Stay with us.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. Michael, I wanted to ask you one last question. Some recent news development relative to the University of New Orleans. Heartbreaking for me. I'm an alumnus from there. Where do we see this going?
Well, I mean, I think that, I want to give a lot of credit to the new president, Kathy Johnson, and her chief financial officer, Edwin Little. They're dealing with a problem that has been growing, frankly, since Katrina. And at some levels, it's just a math problem. Enrollment at UNO has declined from a number of reasons, from 16,000 or so to now between 6,000 and 7,000. And costs have not, have not shrunk in step. For reasons of the physical plant, for reasons of the faculty. And so even though the people who go to UNO continue to get a fine education at a great price, the cost model is just upside down right now, and it was kind of kicked down the road until now. So I think what you're going to see is they're going to deal with it. I'm hoping that this spurs a structural or a restructuring of the school. And then UNO can focus on being one of the greatest urban research universities in the country, not only serving local students, but also taking in money by serving foreign students who want to come here and be a part of New Orleans. So I think there's going to be some hard yards ahead, but I think it's going to be necessary. I think it's necessary medicine, and we all just have to work together to help UNO. It's going to survive, but not just survive, but really achieve the level of success and prominence that it should, based on the quality, based on the brand, based on the history, based on the alumni. So, you know, as my lawyer annoyingly says, it is what it is right now. It's a financial crisis, but the underlying business, the underlying product is still rock solid. And so we just got to come up with a financial structure that supports it.
No doubt. And if there's anything that we can do here, please know that we're willing to help in any way that we can. You know,
no, we definitely
and
will.
I firmly believe in what Clancy Dubo said, that UNO built the middle class in the greater New Orleans area, and firm believer in that.
That's right. That's right.
So we have a special guest, and he's really special because he's coming to the end of a year that he had to spend with you. So he joins us now, Chris Kane, partner at Adams and Reese, and is the outgoing GNO Inc. board chair. Chris, welcome to the show. Let me let Michael introduce you.
Thank you. Please, of all guys, Chris joins a small group of survivors of the GNO Inc. chairmanship, and
there's a
lean on each other
building. Mm-hmm.
There is, and what they discovered is that by leaning on each other and working the program, they're able to generally, over time, successfully reintegrate with society. And so we're supporting Chris because, no, honestly, Chris was, he's probably the best economic developer lawyer out there, amazing chairman, incredible legal supporter of us as chair and through the Super Bowl, and a great friend. Couldn't be here without him, wouldn't be doing it without him.
Well, Chris, welcome
kind.
To the.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Go ahead.
No, I was just thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here, and it's been a heck of a year, and it's unique, right? In the sense that this year, Mike, the chairmanship role that I got to play in the you know front seat that I had, kind of culminates with a Super Bowl. I don't think any of our other chairmen have had that experience, and it's going to be a heck of a going out party for sure.
And neither did you think that you would be as probably intimately involved with so many different aspects of this event when you started this chairmanship, right?
That's right. You know, in all seriousness, one of the things that when Michael and I were talking about what we were going to focus on this year, it just naturally happens where things pop up, and whether it be you know, responding to a hurricane or whatever the event might be, an insurance crisis, this came and we were asked to step up. Michael specifically was asked to step up and play a really critical role. And looking back at that decision, it was a no-brainer. And I think minus some of the frustration that we have getting around town due to construction, and my partners and friends have no problem complaining about the other result. The other side of it is the result. Just look around how nice things are coming together, and we're at that final stretch, and it's exciting.
What has been the thing that surprised you? I know you've been involved with GNO Inc. For a while, but when you sit as the chair and, you know, a lot of things are flowing through that position, whether you want it or not, it always does. what kind of surprised you the most about the organization, or what did you learn about the organization that you didn't already know?
Well, what I knew is that Michael in and of itself is a tremendous asset and talent, and I think a lot of folks know that, right? The staff is amazing. And, you know, this coordination role in the seat that I had, in part because of my legal background, got to see all the other pieces of our city that and region and state that have come together and coordinated quite a feat. And the creativity to be able to tackle a variety of issues. I think we had, 550 projects that we helped coordinate. That's a lot of agencies. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of personalities. But when everyone in the room and all the agencies involved put our minds together and collaborated, this is the result that we can do as a community. You know, one of the folks, one of my friends had said, and you guys probably hear this a lot, why does it take a Super Bowl for us to get this together, right?
Yeah,
well, we had a 550, now, right. Well, we had a 550 plus list on our honeydew list. You know, it's like when we have a party at my house, my wife tells me,
yeah,
well, we got to do all these things first. It's just natural to do that. The difference here, and I think what Geno Inc.'s role, being asked to play this role, and Michael's leadership has brought to this equation that we haven't had before, is putting in place a system and an understanding of how to operate the day after tomorrow, the day after the Super Bowl. And that's something that our board has really focused on, the staff and Michael has focused on. So when we leave the Super Bowl period, we are better, and we're better more coordinated and functioning, state and region. I think that's the legacy that will come out of this Super Bowl long term.
And I think I understand that y'all have a desire to continue this. And with that, I would ask the following question. You know, it always occurred to me that when you brought a lot of different people from different walks of life into a room together and you throw out a challenge on the table, it's rare that folks start with excuses first, right? It always seemed to me that they started with solutions. But when you went to their individual silos, sometimes there was always the excuse first, and you had to almost pull solutions out of them. I was just wondering your reaction to that.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, Michael has said this time and again to us, the people who are running our agencies are our neighbors. They are talented. They want to deliver for our city. And what was lacking, or at least from my viewpoint, what was lacking was really just a coordinator, somebody who could remove whatever barrier was there and help communicate better. And to keep everybody focused in the room. And I think, you know, Michael, you share exactly that experience with, you know, on this answer, but that's what I've seen, and that's what really I think has made this work.
Yeah, it's an interesting answer, because the first thing that has to be said is that the city team, led by Joe Threat and Gilbert Montagne and all the agency heads, have just been outstanding from start to finish. And Joe Threat is the real quarterback for our weekly efforts within the city. But then in those same meetings, you have all the state agencies. You have DOTD, which has been outstanding. You have Louisiana Economic Development working closely with us. Then you've got the Sewer and Water Board that was in charge of 200 of the projects. Then you've got the other organizations like DDD, FQMD, and so there, everybody had a great capacity, great attitude. Everybody has executed over two dozen organizations. So I think what we ended up being was a connector, an accelerant. In some cases, we were able to bring, small to medium amounts of money to bear. So to kind of use the phrase, I think correctly, we were the lanyap that kind of helped, that kind of optimized all of the pieces and parts. But the pieces and parts are in and of themselves. We were nothing but impressed the whole way through. Still are.
You guys, I notice, GNO Inc. actually funded a couple of these projects, right?
Well, yeah, one of the most fascinating parts about this whole effort is that we have to do the total bill, but we're going to end up spending somewhere between, I don't know, $60, $80 million of stuff in the ground, new projects. But of that, I think under $10 million is going to be new money. And GNO Inc., via an allocation that we got, an appropriation from the state via LED, will have ended up putting in between $6 and $8 million of that, which is a big check. But relative to all the work that's getting done, it's a small fraction. So what that tells you, Noel, is that this was not an issue of money. This was an issue of deployment, which is a little bit counter to the narrative that you usually hear, which is that we just don't have enough money.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Chris, you are kind of in a unique position because one of the agencies that y'all work very closely with, and I'm a big fan of, is the DDD and the work that they've done. You are the legal counsel for the DDD. How did that work out? I mean, any differences in what you see at DDD, GNO Inc., and, you know, the collaborative effort together?
Yeah, it's been a really, I mean, just kind of by happenstance that the relationship between GNO Inc. And DDD evolved with the need to work on these Super Bowl projects and take the opportunity through a collaboration with LED and GNO Inc. and other agencies. The DDD has taken the lead on a number of projects, the French Door projects, which is the 100 block off of Canal and going into the French Quarter, a security outpost that was completed, a number of murals and some public art projects. It just goes to show it's an example, maybe Exhibit A in my mind, of what we're talking about when you're able to take some level of funding and you collaborate with those who can deliver those projects and make it happen. And if you go around the downtown development district right now, you see that, right? If we get the pigeons to work a little bit better with this, right? Because every time we seem to clean the streets, they show back up, and that's a complaint I'm getting. But other than that, it's really the downtown where most of our visitors are going to be is shining, and the district has really done a great job under the leadership of Davon Barber and Chairman Ross and the whole team.
Absolutely. Yep. Got to get to a break. We'll be right back with Chris Kane, partner at Adams & Reese, outgoing GNO Inc. board chair, as well as Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc. Stay with us, folks. This is Newell on WWL. That is a Michael Heck choice, just so everyone's clear as to... Chris, did they give y'all some kind of medal to wear, you know, like that Rex emblem that... after a year with Michael Heck?
Yeah, they should. That's for sure.
I think what do they call it? Think again. My mind just went blank. What do they call that?
Like a special ducal?
You need a full metal jacket.
Some kind.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. Hey, real quick. Michael, if you could give that website again. I'm getting a number of texts about the... park and ride hours of operation, where folks go to check that out.
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, nolastreets.info is the website that has all of the closures on it. We just got the park and ride info. It's not on the website yet. We're going to upload it onto the website. So let me verbal for people again, just so they can hear it. It's going to be on Friday and Saturday. Friday from 2 in the afternoon to 11 at night, Saturday 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. at night, the 7th and 8th, that's the weekend of the game. It's $10. The pickup locations are Delgado, Oakwood Shopping Center, New Orleans East Old Plaza Mall, and the Audubon Zoo. And the primary drop-off point is going to be Diamond Street and Convention Center Boulevard, right by the Fan Zone. And we're going to get that up on our website. It'll be up within the hour.
And a number of folks are asking, does anyone know if 504 Golf will be open for Super Bowl?
That's a good question. Chris?
Yeah, I actually had a chance to tour it 2 days ago. You talk about $40 million investment coming out right at the Super Bowl. And an example of the Super Bowl causing economic development to be prioritized, right? My understanding is they're going to have a soft opening for the Super Bowl for private events and to train up their staff. And so look for more details on that. But I do understand they're going to be having a soft opening.
Now, Michael, I don't know if you ever made it up to D.C., but Chris, I understand that you did. A lot of folks don't realize the importance of bringing everyone together and getting a lot of things done up there. Tell us about the experience.
It was a different experience, obviously, with the snowstorm here. King Rico Alvendea, his theme was Honor, Duty, Louisiana. He did an incredible job of setting the tone. As usual, a lot of great business happened. Michael did make it up and hosted. Juno Inc. was the host of the Economic Development Lunch this year, which is a gigantic group of Louisiana business community leaders all in one house. And the lineup was absolutely incredible. Roger Goodell was there. Drew Brees was there. We had Hakeem Jeffries was invited by Congressman Carter. And not to mention that we have a pretty incredible delegation with Speaker Johnson and Majority Leader Scalise. So, again, it was a really productive week, a little bit light with attendance and people trying to get to D.C. through the snowstorm. But a lot of folks persevered and found ways there, and it was, again, a good week.
Chris, thank you so much for I'm sure, inordinate amount of time that you volunteered to GNO Inc. I mean, I really know and appreciate what it takes, you know, and I think most everybody else does as well. And I know they will join me in thanking you for that commitment and everything that goes along with the Michael Heck baggage. And Michael, thank you. I mean, I'm getting a lot of texts. Folks are just really appreciative of the leadership role that GNO Inc. has taken in this endeavor to put our best foot forward. And it truly is important. Final thoughts, Michael.
Well, no, thank you. It's been an honor and a pleasure for myself and Chris. And we're just really humbled and thankful for the amazing effort from everybody to get this done. And I would be remiss if I could just take 15 seconds more to note that we lost an incredible friend and part of the community this year. The photographer and home food expert Pablo Johnson passed away suddenly. He passed away doing what he loved, photographing a second line. And so I just wanted to ask everybody to keep Pablo in their thoughts and prayers and to thank him for everything that he did. He embodied New Orleans culture, photographed it, and then gave out the photos.
Absolutely. Thank you both, gentlemen. Truly appreciate it. We know you're busy. Have a great week. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. When we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics.